Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to continue talking about Shanti Davis' Guide to the Bodhisattva Way, Chapter 6 on Patience. Before I start, I just want to remind everybody that these verses are about cultivating patience. So they're not about absolving ourselves and others of responsibility for our actions. Okay? So if that thought comes to your head, just know that what this is about is cultivating skillful means so that when we're in a difficult situation, we can respond to that situation in a way that is helpful, as opposed to creating more conflict, ill will, unskillfulness. We are up to verse 41 out of about 121 verses. So I know what I'm going to be talking about. Probably into next year. Maybe not that long. Okay, so this set of verses is about a kind of dharmic logic. So this is a kind of logic in how we can talk to ourselves when we are upset with someone in a way that will create some kind of mental equanimity for ourselves. Okay? Here's the first verse. If I become angry with the wielder, although I am actually harmed by his stick, then, since he too is secondary, being in turn incited by hatred, I should be angry with the hatred instead. Okay, so somebody's trying to hit you with a stick, and you're getting angry with them about it. So Shanti Davis says, well, if I'm getting angry with the person who's about to hit me with the stick, even though I'm actually harmed by the stick, why don't I get angry with the stick? Which we don't usually do. And then he says, but since that person is secondary, and what is really inciting the action is hatred, then why not be upset with hatred? Like, go to the root of the action. So we often blame other people for our emotions. We say, he made me do this, she made me do this. So he's saying, well, that would be a good thing to look at about this. He's pointing out that we blame the person who's wielding the weapon, but actually, why not be angry with the stick, which we are not, because we think of it as being without volition, right? That's why we don't get angry with the stick. We just think the stick is kind of caught in circumstances. It just happens to be lying there. It's an inanimate object. It's insentient, for the most part, is how we think about sticks. And so we think, well, the stick isn't really responsible, so we don't blame the stick. But we also don't usually blame the emotion. We don't blame the hatred. We blame the person. So we get angry with the person. Shanti Davis, he's saying, well, he doesn't think that that's very good logic. That actually we should get angry with the anger. So the stick and the person and even the anger is actually the end result of a series of causes and conditions that we may not, probably are not aware of. Okay? So he's saying that because of the circumstances of this, why are we responding with violence? Why are we responding to this violence with violence? Because actually, it is just the kind of total culmination of the circumstances with which this is arising. So our response should not be violence in return. So we should understand that this person, like the stick or the emotion of hatred, whatever's causing this emotional response, is the result of the causes and conditions or the karma of their life or the situation. Now you could say to yourself, well, wait a minute, I also have causes and conditions and karma, and therefore I should be able to get angry too. right? I should be able to pick up a stick and hit this person back, or whatever it is. But remember, we're talking about how do we cultivate calm equanimity and a skillful response in the face of this violence. And we do that with this kind of logic. So Shantideva, throughout the course of this chapter, he has lots of these kind of little logical ways that we can, or techniques that we can use to kind of talk ourselves down from this really, you know, knee-jerk emotional response to something that's going on that's upsetting us. So this is one way to talk yourself down, which is to say, this is coming from the causes and conditions. I think that this person is doing something against me that is, you know, that really upsets me, and they're responsible, it's their fault, therefore it's okay for me to get angry in response. And he's saying, no, it's not. Because actually, the cause of their unskillfulness has to do with a whole cascading event, a whole cascading series of events, which is also true for us as well. But for us, as the practitioner, we're being asked to really examine this and have a different response. So we're not being asked to change the other person, we're being asked to change our own response. So he says, at the end he says, so instead I should be angry with the emotion of hatred, and it's hatred which motivates the response. And so this, we try to rationalize our own anger and hatred, but actually, if we are angry with the hatred or the anger or any other kind of problematic resentment or response that we should have, we should make our best effort to free ourselves from those emotions. So he's saying that how do we respond to this hatred that we hate? So we can't respond to the hatred that we hate with hatred. We have to respond to this hatred that we have a problem with by focusing on our own ability to skillfully respond to that without being violent. So I was thinking about this. I thought, well, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, our motivation for doing that is to remember our bodhisattva vows, right? What is our deepest intention? And those bodhisattva vows are predicated on this teaching that we are all in this interconnected relationship, that we all want to end our suffering, and that we are caught clinging to self, clinging to these erroneous ideas that we have about the nature of reality. But the truth of our situation is that we are in this together, we're in a cooperative relationship, that we are all subject to impermanence, and that we get caught in these attachments. So not understanding that is a root cause, from a Buddhist point of view, of these what we're called afflictive emotions. We also, in Western culture, go to therapy, right? Seriously. We go to therapy. We go to therapists. We talk about it from a Western point of view. We talk about, what do we talk about? We talk about our childhood. We talk about how we were brought up. Those are the causes and conditions of our life. So we talk about these causal relationships, and we try to figure out and kind of neutralize, if you will, the effect of these causal relationships that are causing us suffering. So that's, from a Buddhist point of view, that's what we're doing in therapy. So he's saying, you know, don't get angry with the person, get angry, if you will, or upset, or decide that you're going to change something based on the violence of the emotion itself, and not wanting to respond that way, remembering our bodhisattva vows. So then Shantideva says, in this logic that he's presenting, previously, I must have caused similar harm to other sentient beings. I must have caused similar harm to other sentient beings. Therefore, it is right for this harm to be returned to me, who has been the cause of injury to others. Well, I kind of hope this makes you a little uncomfortable, right? This is definitely not the way we think about this kind of thing in Western culture. This kind of logic comes from, ultimately, from an understanding about the nature of rebirth, that we are reborn into our current human life because of various causes and conditions throughout eons of various rebirths that have ended up in this situation. So this is a kind of traditional Buddhist teaching, and it's still a traditional Buddhist teaching in a lot of schools. But from a Zen perspective, we don't think about it that way. We think about it as this moment, and this moment, and this moment, and this moment. We say each moment is reborn. Each moment. So I would not say that it's, I think it's particularly helpful to think about this verse exactly in the way that Shantideva is talking about it. I would say that we should think about it in the sense that we ourselves have done unskillful things in the past, and that we are going to be the recipient of unskillful actions from other people. Not necessarily because there's some one-on-one relationship here, but because as human beings, we all engage in unskillful behavior. As human beings, we all engage in ways in which we do things that are unskillful. And where does that unskillfulness come from? Where does that anger come from? Where does that greed come from? Our own anger, our own greed, our own envy, our own sense that something is missing and we have to fix it, you know? And that we have these various methodologies of fixing it that may not be particularly skillful or helpful, that may cause us to get angry, to get greedy, to be delusional about the nature of reality. So I think it's helpful to remember this. And when we remember this, you know, this is the genesis of our empathy and compassion towards others. We go, oh yeah, I know what that feels like. I may not know exactly what this feels like, but I know what it feels like to be really upset about something. I know what it feels like to do something that's unskillful, that if I thought about it, I'd probably feel pretty bad, you know. And so that maybe I want to cut this person some slack in the way I do this. Now again, you know, a reminder, this is not about... Shantideva's not talking about... I'm going to use a double negative. He's not talking about not setting boundaries. Okay, so if you're in an abusive situation, you want to set boundaries. It isn't like you say, oh, it's the causes and conditions of this person's life, and therefore it's okay for them to hit me. It's not okay for them to hit you, right? So you set boundaries and say, no, it's not okay for you to hit me. But how do you set those boundaries? Do you set those boundaries by lashing out violently, by being angry, by trying to put them down, by saying hurtful things to them or doing hurtful things? Are you punitive and you want to punish and get revenge? That kind of thing? Or do you want to respond with equanimity? Do you want to respond in a way that is remembering that it's not the stick's fault? Remembering that it, in some ways it's not the person's fault either. They are responsible for their actions. And yet simultaneously, we all know what it is to be caught in our own causes and conditions, right? We know what it is to not be able to even see what it is that we're doing. Surely that's happened to you. I know it's happened to me, where I've done something and then later on I've gone, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? You know? And you discover that it's kind of this just response that you're engaged in. And then you think about it and you go, well, what was I up to? What was that about? And hopefully you can kind of suss out what that might have been. But then there are times that we don't even know. So there are times that we're completely in the dark. We have no clue what we're up to. There are times that we kind of have an idea what we're up to, but we don't really want to see that, so we rationalize that behavior. Then there are times when we do things that we really know what we're up to, that we should know better. And then there are times when we do kind of an in-between right thing, and there are times we completely do something that's the right thing, and then there are times we do it and we don't even think about it. So there's this whole spectrum of ways that we can be. So as Buddhist practitioners, we're trying to get over to this spectrum over here, to this end, over here, where it's like we don't even think about it. Or at least we want to get in the middle. So that's what we're working towards, but we all know what it is like to be over here on this other side. So that's how I interpret this verse, is to remember that we also do this. Pema Chodron's interpretation of the verse is, she says that, so the verse is, previously I must have caused similar harm to other sentient beings. Therefore, it is right for this harm to be returned to me, who has been the cause of injury to others. So Pema Chodron, being a modern teacher, I think also had problems with this verse, because she quotes someone who says, it's like playing with fire for your child. If you're a child, you play with fire, you don't know what you're doing, and then you get burnt and you learn from it. The Tibetan teachings say that when we cultivate patience in a difficult situation, we are working off our own karmic misdeeds. So there we have this kind of incentive for a good rebirth, right? Just, you know, but also because we all want to be, we want to learn to be good people. So you can, however you think about this, the idea is that, again, this is a kind of logic that you're creating for yourself when you're really upset with something, that you sit down and you say to yourself, first verse is, you know, this is the causes and conditions. Second verse is, I'm part of the causes and conditions. And if I'm not part of the causes and conditions, I still know what it's like to be caught in those causes and conditions. And that I remember my bodhisattva vow and that I want to cultivate skillful means. Okay, the next verse is a direct reference to the first one about the wielding the stick. Shantideva said, both the weapon and my body are the cause of my suffering. Since he gave rise to the weapon and I to the body, with whom should I be angry? Okay, so we have bodies. Person hits us with a stick. Should I be angry with my body for hurting? And you might think to yourself, well, that's pretty screwy. Like, why would I be angry with my body? Well, the logic of that is that you wouldn't be in this body if it weren't for your karmic situation. If it weren't for this rebirth. Because otherwise, if you were off the wheel of birth and death completely, you would not be reborn at all. So this is this Buddhist teaching about rebirth and the wheel of birth and death. So this way in which you have the body, that person has a stick, your body hurts, but if you were a more advanced practitioner, let us say, this wouldn't be a problem. So that's a kind of old, I call this in my notes, old school logic. This is Buddhist old school logic. In our logic, if you will, in the Bodhisattva path, I am reborn into the Saha world. I have been reborn. That is the Bodhisattva vow. The Bodhisattva is not trying to get off the wheel of birth and death. The Bodhisattva, the highest level Bodhisattva's karmic attachment that pulls them into the next lifetime is the desire to save or benefit all beings. Because the Bodhisattva is attached to this desire. Therefore, that attachment pulls them into the next lifetime. So, doing Bodhisattva practice, we know that we're born into the Saha world, which means we're in a body, right? We're in this body, in order to bring about beneficial action. And if that's the case, and that's my vow, then how can I get unhappy because my body hurts? Okay? So you can also think about it that way. Why? It's not a reason. Again, this is about kind of going off the deep end. It's not a reason, a rationalization for why it's okay for us to be unskillful. Here's the next verse. It is the fault of the childish that they are hurt. For although they do not wish to suffer, they are greatly attached to its causes. So why should they be angry with others? You know, in a way, I really love this particular set of verses because it's so not about how we think about these things. You know, it's so challenging. He really is challenging us to kind of step up the plate in a way. So don't just offhandedly say, nope, I'm not going with this. Like, Shinshu, why did you even talk about these verses? Why didn't you skip these and go on to the next ones, right? But this way in which we, it challenges us to think about the nature of our practice. It challenges us to think about and to use the teachings, this kind of logic. So, okay, the verse is, it is the fault of the childish that they are hurt. Okay, so who are the childish? We are the childish. It is our fault, in a sense. It is our delusion that causes us to misinterpret the nature of our experience. So it is our delusion that causes us to become angry and to want to engage in violence. It is our delusion that causes us to be angry and want to engage in violence in response to someone who is violent with us. Again, this is not about setting boundaries. This is about how do we respond? How do we set boundaries in a way that is helpful? How do we set boundaries in a way that is not violent, that is not coming back into somebody's face or wanting to hit them or punish them? So this childishness refers to our own immaturity in understanding the logic of the practice that we're engaged in. And then he says, it is the fault of the childish that they are hurt, for although they do not wish to suffer, they are greatly attached to the causes of suffering. So we all know that about addictive behavior, that when we're engaged in addictive behavior, we engage in addictive behavior because we think it's going to make us feel better. So, you know, I used to smoke cigarettes, and it's like when I smoke, once you get past that initial learning to smoke, it's an acquired habit, right? But once you get past the choking over the smoke part, which I did at the age of 12, when you get past that part, it's like smoking feels good. You know, it has physiological, helps you. Drinking coffee, but you can still drink too much coffee, you know. And we all know now that smoking is very bad for you. You shouldn't do that at all, right? And so, maybe we drink wine, but we also know that if we drink too much, that's really bad for our liver and various other things, and it destroys our life. But we start out doing those things because we think that they're making us feel better. And so, as human beings, our tendency is less is not more, more is more. More is better. More is better. So if a little bit is good, then more is better. And so we don't seem to have, sometimes we don't have the off button. We just have the more, more, more button. And this causes us suffering, you know. Same thing about anger or greed or any of these other kinds of afflictive emotions, that often we can get caught in them and something about it feels good to us, and we just want to perpetuate that. You know, there's something about it that feels really good to just get it off your chest, you know, to just let go and fly and let whatever happen happens. Or, you know, it's like, yeah, if going out and buying this great pair of shoes is nice, it'd be really great to have 40 pairs of shoes. You know, and we say, I need 40 pairs of shoes because, well, I have 40 outfits. And so, or maybe just because they're really cool looking. I can't afford it, by the way, but I do have a credit card. So I can go out and buy. Now, if you can afford 40 pairs of shoes, and you go for it, you know, if it's not a problem, go for it. But if it's a problem, then it's something we need to look at. And it's so hard because these things are kind of gray areas, and I'm just kind of going off over here. But the thing about it is that from an emotional point of view, with emotion like anger, when we just kind of let it go, that can be a real problem. So it is the fault of the childish that they are hurt, because, again, being childish is not a bad thing necessarily, but he's just saying when we're in delusion, we create our own suffering, essentially. So this is a core Buddhist teaching, right? And that's what we're all trying to wake up to. We're all trying to wake up to the nature of our delusion, whatever that might be, however it's playing out in our own lives. So, although we don't wish to suffer, we are still greatly attached to the causes of suffering. So why should we be angry with others? when we ourselves are engaged in this kind of activity. The next verse is, having been instigated by my own actions. So this is attachment to blaming, anger, resentment, etc. towards others. Those are the kinds of actions. Having been instigated by my own actions, those who cause me harm come into being. If by those actions they should fall into hell, surely isn't it I who am destroying them? So there are two ideas here in this verse. The first one is that having been instigated by my own actions, those who cause me harm come into being. I think this is a kind of tough pill to swallow. And again, I feel like it's from a kind of larger view, if you will, about rebirth and things like that. You could say, well, I'm in this situation because of all the various causes and conditions of my life, which are caused by the actions and various interrelated things of my own circumstances that cause me to be here at this moment, at this time. Well, everybody who's a feminist knows that statement that says, you know, well, you shouldn't have been there to women. Well, yeah, you got raped because you shouldn't have been there. You shouldn't have been in an alley at night. So we know that kind of logic for me is very hard to kind of think of it that way, you know, like, well, you got raped because in previous lifetime, these circumstances, and therefore you were in this alley in a dark night, yada-da-da-da. Bullshit. I'm sorry, I can't go there. But there is this way in which, also there's this kind of logic that I think sometimes we engage in, which is, if I were the perfect person, like if I never said the wrong thing, never did the wrong thing, I was always happy, I was always this, I was always that, everybody would respond to me peacefully and calmly, and I would never, ever, ever be in a relationship where there was any conflict at all. Like, that's la-la land. You know, that's not how it works either. So I think it's inevitable that we will be in conflict. It's inevitable that we will be in circumstances where there's some kind of conflict, and it's not about blaming ourselves for that reason. But what he's trying to say is, Shantideva is trying to say, when we're out there doing the blame game, it's really helpful to look at our own actions. Because when we go out there and we blame other people, it's never about us. It's always about the other guy. He did this, she said this, this happened, I'm this, I'm that. It's all about ourselves. And so when we think about it this way, we think, well, wait a minute, did I do anything? Am I, you know, is there something that I might have done to create this situation? Or just, I'm taking responsibility for my own emotions. It doesn't even matter what the other person, you know, is up to. I'm responsible from my own emotions. I'm responsible for how I respond. Because what goes along with blame is, he made me do this. She made me do this. She made me feel this way. Maybe that's true when we're children, but as adults, essentially, it's not true. As adults, from a Buddhist point of view, we make choices about how we're going to respond to a situation. We make the choice to be angry. We make the choice to be greedy. We make the choice to have resentments. We make the choice to get jealous. It might not feel like we're making that choice. And so then that is kind of a wake-up call at that point. We say, man, I'm being just completely overwhelmed by anger. I'm completely overwhelmed by jealousy. I'm completely overwhelmed by whatever that is. And we say, this is really doesn't feel good. This emotion really, these kinds of strong negative emotions, they don't feel good in your body. They don't cause stability, mental stability. They really all around are just not a happy thing. And then who gets to change that? Who can change those emotions? The other person can't do it for us. I can remember younger going to therapy and hoping that my therapist had a magic wand. You know, it's like you go to therapy and the therapist goes, and bing, bing, I'm your fairy godmother, and now you're going to leave and you're going to be happy for the rest of your life. It doesn't work that way. It's a dialogue, right? And somehow in the process of that dialogue, you change and grow and understand something about your emotions. You start to get a grip and mature and all of those things. So our Buddhist practice is the same way. We have to apply the teachings. Would that it were so, that we listen to a lecture and bing, sometimes we have really nice insights during lectures, but usually we listen to the lecture, we say, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And then off to the next thing. So we need to study these things. So when, and then when it comes up, when we actually have a problem, when we actually are kind of out of our minds with anger, this pops into our head. Oh, maybe I could think about this. Let's make a gap in here. You know the phrase like count to 10 before you say something? That old saw? Well, it works. You know? I'm going to count to 10 in here, and maybe between like 5 and 6, I'm going to insert some Buddhist teaching. Between 5 and 6, I'm going to think, oh, what could I have had to do with this? Or maybe I don't want to be caught in the suffering of my own afflictive emotions. Okay, so that's one thought about that. The next part of the sentence is, if by these actions they should fall into hell, surely isn't it I who am destroying them? So, again, this is technically talking about rebirth, but let's talk about it in from the sense of, if by their own actions, and by my response, if my response is to throw fuel on the fire, if my response is to start yelling back and hitting with sticks and doing all the things that are unhelpful, that are not intended to maybe de-escalate, I'm upping the ante at that point. I'm engaging in an activity that's upping the emotional response. So I'm engaging in an activity, I'm getting in that person's face, I'm causing them to be even more upset and more caught in their own emotions. So aren't I creating a hell for them? Aren't I escalating their suffering through what I'm doing? And then that's why he says, isn't it I who am destroying them at that point? So if we look at our bodhisattva vows, if our bodhisattva vow is to benefit all beings, to save all beings, beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusion is inexhaustible, I vow to end it. Dharma gates are boundless. This is a big Dharma gate. Like this kind of stuff is a neon Dharma gate. Enter me. Enter here, all ye faithful, right? So this Dharma gate, Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So if we remember our bodhisattva vows, then we are saying, oh, wow, this is like not kind of doing that. This is doing something else. And the last one I want to talk about today is, so since I'm causing harm to them and they are benefiting me, why, unruly mind, do you become angry in such a mistaken manner? Okay, so the logic of this is, since I'm causing harm to them and they are benefiting me. So here I am, I'm like freaking out back at somebody, yelling at them, whatever I'm, and I'll tell you, I know about this stuff. I do. When I was younger, so I'll tell the story of myself. I would never do this now. When I was younger, I used to work as a stagehand and at a TV station, and they have these kind of cables with rings on them that you put a crescent wrench on, and you clip it on. So if you drop the crescent wrench, it, you know, like it's got this tether on it. Well, I went home after about a 12-hour shift at work, and there was somebody who blocked me in a parking lot, and I took the thing and slammed it onto their windshield and broke their windshield. Okay? This is like a really bad anger response. This is not helpful, right? This is not a helpful response. And then I discovered that I actually could get out of the parking lot without, even though their car was there, which I suppose was good for me because I was able to weasel out of any repercussions that might have come if that person had come back and said, gee, you're trying to get out? Are you the one who put the, you know, broke my windshield? So can you imagine the suffering? I mean, I can't even remember the level of my anger when I talk about this happened when I was like, this happened 45 years ago. So there's this way in which, you know, it's like this kind of, but it was this volatile, unexamined, immediate response. This person is in my way. Look what they did. It's their fault. They did this thing. They must have done it on purpose to me, right? And so without even thinking, it's okay for me to take this piece of airplane cable with a hook on the end of it and slam it in their windshield because don't they deserve that? I mean, it's like, it's to me, I look at that now and I say, that is the most absurd logic. And yet, we all know that logic. We all know what that feels like. And maybe some of us in this room have done something similar. I don't know. No. And hopefully all of us have gotten beyond that place. At least that kind of thing. So, you know, who should we be angry with? The wielder of the cable or the... Anyway. So, this is like, you know, these teachings are transformative. The teachings are this way that we realize that we are causing our own selves to be in a hell realm and also causing others to be in a hell realm. And right now, in particular, in our lives, in this world that we're living in a world where we're dealing with ecology issues for the environment, we're dealing with polarization and politics, all of these things that we're dealing with, it really behooves us to study this teaching very carefully. It really behooves us to create this kind of gentle heart, if you will, towards each other. This way that we cultivate compassion towards each other. That we allow some space for other people's unskillfulness. That we work on our own mental stability so that we don't have knee-jerk responses. It's always important. But right now, I think in particular, when we read the newspaper, watch television, go online, talk to each other, do all the things that we do and interact, that we recall these teachings and work with them as a way to cultivate this kind of equanimity, mental equanimity, which is why he says, okay, so again, I'm sorry, I kind of went off. If you're causing harm to them, they're benefiting you because this is an opportunity for you to work on this practice. So that benefits you, okay? All these difficult situations is how your wisdom is created. You don't create wisdom in a vacuum. Wisdom comes from difficult situations and learning how to flex those muscles, learning how to lift that weight, you know, learning how to do something skillful in the midst of being challenged. So that's, you know, Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. That's entering into that Dharma gate. So why would we get angry with somebody who's giving us this opportunity to enter into a Dharma gate? So from a Buddhist perspective, it's very illogical. And then I like the unruly mind part because that's who's engaged in this, is our little runaway minds. You know, our there we are with the eight horses crazed, you know, they've got the bit in their teeth. You know that expression, right? It's where it comes from. The horse gets a bit. You know, horses have like a gap at the back of their jaw where the bits sit. So they get the bit pushed forward with their tongue and they clamp onto it and then you have no control over them anymore. And they're just like hell-bent for leather, you know. They're running, running, running. And so that's what we're like. The bit of Buddhist teachings is now between our teeth. So instead of biting down and taking off crazily, we should pay attention to it, digest it, chew it up, remember it. And then, so the unruly mind, so these are ways in which we make our mind, use our mind. We use our mind. Shanti Devi is asking us to use our minds to work on our practice, use our intellect, use the kind of logic of this. So that means that, you know, when something happens and you're upset, you sit down and actually, and so you actually sit down and kind of go through this. You can make a list of these things and you can say, oh, is this the one where I want to remember that I too do unskillful things? Is this the one that I want to remember that I have an unruly mind and that I actually can rise to the occasion and guide myself a little better? Is this the one that I want to remember that I have a bodhisattva vow to enter all dharma gates, and this is a dharma gate, and why am I angry with this person? Is this the one? And your mind's going to go, no, this isn't the one. No, I don't like that one either. That's not the one. We're not doing that one today, you know. And then you have to say, well, one of these works, so let's go back over this list again. And that's how we train our minds. We say, you know, this is my deepest vow. You remind yourself, what is my deepest vow in this situation? It has to be very specific. It can't be general. The vow of saving all beings doesn't cut it. You know, my what is my vow? My vow is, right now with this person, right now, I want to find a mind of equanimity. That's my vow, right in this moment. Now, unruly mind, my buddy who's kind of a little crazy right now, let's sit down and talk about this. How are we going to make this happen? What do I need to do to make this happen? How can I talk myself into this, if you will, and by remembering my vow and knowing that it's going to hurt because we are attached to the small self, and the small self is the one who's unruly. It's not our bodhisattva minds. It's not our Buddha nature. It's not the part of ourselves that's kind of big and expansive, the person that we always want to be. It's that person that's about your me, 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 me. They did this to me. Me, 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 me. The childish one, right? So we have to sit down with ourselves. No one else can do that for us. So I really love Shanti Devi for this reason. He just lays it out for you, you know? And then, of course, we have to do the work. Thank you very much.